wonder about big data?
Yeah.
Chuck, is that you again, Chuck? You're done, Chuck. Stay off my show now. Just bring the sandwiches. I don't want to hear about this anymore. Big data. I mean, what is it? You know, you hear metadata, big data. You hear all kinds of data. Everything's data.
Metadata.
Metadata. Well, Jignesh Patel is here with us today. He is the big man on campus on big data. In fact, they call him Big Data. Would you welcome, please, Jignesh Patel, ladies and gentlemen, the man who knows about big data and what it means and what it doesn't. Thank you. You're here at the UW, and what is actually the name of that department that does big data here?
Computer Sciences Department.
Well, that's what they call it, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than it was probably when you started studying computers and all that, isn't it?
Yeah, the field was very different, but we had started to look at data and how to analyze data even way back 20 years ago when I was a student over here.
Yeah. And we didn't used to have data. I was thinking when I was a kid, I don't remember anyone saying data. I don't think we had it. Or we had a datum. We had a single piece. There's no datum anymore, is there?
No. I think we've always had data. Now, I think what has changed is we've been able to store and keep a large volume of that data around. We don't throw things away. It's kind of like going to your basement and keep on collecting stuff. You don't have to throw things away or empty out your basement because we can build bigger and bigger basements for you to keep accumulating your data.
That's very frightening.
It is. It is.
Yes. Shouldn't we be very afraid of all this data? Our data is being collected because we're not collecting it necessarily. Someone, some other, you know, Amazon's collecting it, or Apple is, or UW is collecting it in their basement there.
Yeah, that's right. No, we don't collect data on our students right now. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Just kidding, you do, right?
But, you know, we do collect data too. So people put a lot of their pictures and a lot of their interactions on social media. So in some sense, that is data that belongs to us, and we keep it with these social networking sites, and we share it with our friends and family. So
when you say we, who is we in this case?
So anyone who's in social on a social network?
Yeah. But who is keeping it then?
Oh, so the big companies are keeping it, but we are the ones who are creating it, and we are the ones who are accessing it.
So that, and there are these giant things in the middle of Oregon or something like that, right?
Yes. So they are called big data centers. They are
good name for them.
That's right.
They're big, and they have data.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's it's like taking big football fields and putting in big farms of servers. Sometimes they are called server farms, and in fact, many of those are built over what used to be farms.
Yeah.
So, and you go into one of these, and there will be hundreds of thousands or millions of computers.
They're very tight security, aren't they?
They're very tight security, yeah. So usually these places don't have people actually moving around over there. Very few people are actually going to be in these centers, and there are some installs where no human being goes in. It's just built, assembled, you plug it in, and then
there's no human beings in these
buildings?
There's
no human beings. No, not in the big data centers, but there are smaller sort of container-sized data centers in which you really don't have human beings going inside.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I feel like who steals my data steals nothing. You know, but apparently, not just everything that every transaction and every social network thing, but also my location. Now, location's a big one. That's location, 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 right?
Yep. That's right. Okay.
That's what you're into, right?
No. It's a whole bunch of things, including location. Yeah. But you're right. We all carry around phones with us, and we run a lot of apps on these phones. And every time we start interaction with those apps, we are in feeding data to that app, and that gets collected most of the times and analyzed for a variety of purposes, including trying to provide us better service or trying to better understand what we are doing. And sometimes it gets used in ways that we probably don't want it used that way.
Yeah, such as what way? Might it be misused?
It might be misused. So, for example, there's a huge concern about kids putting up their data on social networks and not really recognizing that that data doesn't really go away for a while. Recruiters routinely look at what activities potential employees have on these social networks before doing that. Yeah. So we all have to be a little bit careful about what we put up out over there.
Yeah, but whether we're careful or not, they get it, right?
They do get it, and we use them, so they get that data. And the hope is they're providing us a service. All of these services are free. In the sense that we don't pay for them right away, but we pay for them by advertisements that get shown to us. And the hope is that we get shown advertisements when we use any of these services that are relevant to us, because even for the advertisers, it doesn't make sense to show you an advertisement for something that you would never buy because it's just a waste of money.
So and there was a science fiction movie, so the guy was walking down the street, and as they're walking down, billboards that are geared to them, as they pass them, flashes something that's appropriate to something, that it's a place that they've been or whatever.
Yes, yes.
And so, and that's not no longer science fiction.
That's no longer science fiction. Yeah. And so we are starting to see that happen in a big way. And some of it is good, some of it is bad. Of course, we get to see the information that we want in a timely fashion, in a way that is personalized for the way we are. We like to receive that information. But it can also be a little bit dangerous, because then it's very easy for you to just live in your own little world where you're surrounded by ideas and things that you like. So it's not, you know, we no longer have this mechanism where you just stroll through a library and pick up a book from a shelf that you didn't intend to go and start reading it, or talk to people that you didn't really sort of know before, or sort of expected to have the same sort of opinions as you do. So there is a cost to some of this hyper-personalization. So we, as a society, need to be very aware of what this technology does. And in some sense, we have to be more aware of the way these things work and try to get ourselves out a little bit more receptive to new ideas, new ways of thinking, and not just go into a tunnel vision of what we've already presupposed.
Well, now that I'm, we need to be more aware. But I mean, it's hard to understand it, right? Because it's the people who are like on the genius level, like yourself.
No.
I mean, you know, people are real smart now, and you know, for example, all the phone records, that whole thing with Snowden and all that stuff, are phone records, and which in and of itself, they don't really actually look at what you say on the phone, but they tell where your calls went and so forth. And the same thing, like on this location stuff, they know where your location. What is the value of knowing someone's location at any given point in time?
So a lot, especially if you combine it with other pieces of information that you have, right?
Yeah.
So for example, if I know that you're looking for a specific type of an apparel, like a hat or a cap, and you're next to a store that sells that type of hat, then you know, I could use your location along with things that you have an inclination towards purchasing, and maybe try to send you a promotion that tries to bring you in.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not all just targeting at that individual. It's like making decisions on a mass scale of what will be produced.
Yeah.
And you know what sort of products and stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, if you take a,
is that good or is that, I don't know.
I think it's a mixed bag. I don't think there's an answer per se to say it's just good or bad, right? So I think a lot of the use of data is to try to eliminate waste and improve the efficiencies with which businesses provide services to the end consumers. And at the end of the day, the businesses provide what consumers demand. So for example, if you're a retailer and you're trying to produce 100,000 shirts of a new design, you would like to know whether there's going to be a market for that, or if your target customers.
Shouldn't you know that before you get into the business?
Well, but yeah, you should, absolutely, absolutely. And that's the whole trick. It's you don't necessarily always know what's going to be a hit. Fashion changes over time, or people's preferences change over time. And now you have a lot more data to potentially try and figure out what's going to be a trend, or what's going to be a more receptive market for something that you want to produce.
Doesn't this actually sort of, in a way, couldn't it work against innovation? Because most innovation is not based on whether someone's going to need this device or it's useful somehow in our society, but the fact that someone has just come up with this idea in a lab at Bell Labs or something, and this is, you know, an amazing idea, and it's a great leap forward that was unexpected. But if you're looking just at what people are doing now, you're going to just give them more of that.
So you're right, but it generally doesn't work that way. And so you can take all of the technology that we have and actually turn it around, and people do that routinely. So instead of saying, I'm just going to try one of these things as a product to try and produce, you could try to find smart ways to say, let me try and do 1,000 experiments. And there'll be small bets that you take. And then you put that out and see what catches on. And that's what you go after. So technology can actually help you de-risk some of these choices that you make. And in fact, innovation doesn't have to stop. You might be able to do more innovation and take more bets if you make use of all of this technology. So, and that's how you see a lot of, if you take an app, for example, or if you think about screen design for a popular social network, they're constantly trying to figure out what colors work well on those screens for specific demographics, and they can just experiment with that on a massive scale And then if blue works for you, you're going to start to see a lot of blue on your screens when you go to these websites. And so innovation doesn't have to stop. You could actually turn that around and use the technology to let 1,000 flowers bloom and see which is the best one for you as opposed to being someone else.
But it seems to me that you start seeing just a lot of blue screens. You know, and then we all have blue screens and we all have, you know, orange whatevers. And then there's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Wouldn't it tend to standardize sort of things and what would sell?
Yeah.
Things that were iffy, they're innovative, but maybe would not sell, would not even be produced.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And this goes back to the initial conversation we were having, is that we have to be careful that we still try to take non-linear directions every once in a while and try things that's outside sort of our comfort zone. And you're right, a lot of innovation comes from that. But all I'm saying is it doesn't have to stop with that. You can say, I can try some of these things out, but now I can quantitatively evaluate fairly quickly as to what is the value of that type of an innovation. We still need to take some long-term bets and long-term risky, follow some long-term risky ideas. You know, I'll give you a good example. For in medicine, we are constantly trying to discover new drugs, but there, all of this technology, big data, helps in a way, because in the old days, we used to design drugs that sort of worked across an entire population. Mm-hmm. But each and every one of us is unique and different in the way we work, in terms of the way our genotype works. And now with big data, you can try to figure out what those nuances mean for specific diseases and try to produce what are called designer drugs.
Designer drugs, yeah.
Yep. So that has spurred innovation to the next level, which would not have been possible without the technology to be able to look at this data at this level of fidelity and then make sense of it.
Yeah. And you have developed yourself this thing called,
Locomatics, yeah.
Locomatics.
Yeah. So that was a platform for mobile data-driven services. So location, for example, what you were saying, we had deployed it in the city of Madison, where if you were a bus driver, you could get information about when the bus outside your stop was 5 minutes away. So if you're taking the bus every morning at 8 o'clock, and if it gets very cold, like we've had a very brutal winter, and you don't want to stand out there for more than a minute, and the bus is a little bit behind, then the app would tell you it's 2 minutes away, it's time for you to come out.
A regular person would get this app?
Yes,
bus driver would have it?
No, a regular person.
The Chicago CTA has that.
Right, they do?
Yeah, you could use an app for that.
So you know they're going to be standing there for a half hour no matter what you do anyhow. But it's even crueler, I think.
Maybe while you're standing there, you could be on your favorite social network and looking at that.
Well, that's interesting. And that's something that you own that, or does the University of Wisconsin own that?
So I started that.
I mean, this is probably...
Yeah, so I started that company with my friend Karthik Ramasamy. He was also a graduate from here at Wisconsin when we were students.
This is your own company.
And so I started this when I was a professor at Michigan 6 years ago.
Oh, so they own it?
Nope. Now Twitter acquired that company last summer, so it's part of Twitter now.
It's part of Twitter. Oh, that's cool. Congratulations. That's
Thank
a
you.
Big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So so how would that work on Twitter then?
They won't let me tell you that.
See what I mean? This is why people are worried about it. It's proprietary or something. It's good, though, right?
Yeah,
it'll be a good thing.
Yeah, there are a bunch of signatures I had to sign. So. Yeah.
Okay. So it's somewhere where you are when you're tweeting.
Yes.
Can we say that?
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah.
Because they keep asking me. Twitter wants to know where you are, and I always say, no, forget you.
You're smart. You're pretty aware about your privacy, and I think everyone should
be a little
bit aware.
Home.
Yeah, I'm always in the same place. That throws off the whole paradigm because I don't move hardly at all or something.
Yeah.
Then we're in this other thing, though, which is really it's a Star Wars between data centers and between clouds.
Yeah.
And storing all this data. And it'll be like a world war eventually, won't you think? Between, you know, the Samsung cloud versus the Apple cloud versus the Amazon versus Google.
Yeah. So I think that competition is already starting to happen.
Yeah,
everyone wants to be the place where you store all the data about everything that you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's the upshot of that, though? I mean, that's kind of a little bit disturbing because there's this competition for all your personal information that you didn't know they had in the first place.
No, they have all your personal information. You just didn't know they had.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we didn't know. Even though I say I try to uncheck anything that says, you know, track me or whatever and stuff, but they still have a lot.
I think what they're competing for is different aspects of your life.
My soul.
Yeah, your soul, and you could no, I'm just kidding. but what they are trying to do at the end of the day, you wouldn't put your data in those services unless you can get some value out of it, right? So all of these guys are trying to provide you some service for you putting some part of your life and digitizing it, right? Whether it is your photos or your interactions or the messages that you send. And it's good that there's a competition for all of that because that drives prices down. It drives innovation from the perspective of them providing you better services or new techniques to use, like, you know, you don't have to wait outside and freeze while if the bus is late. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think there's a fierce competition, and we don't know when the dust settles as to who's still going to stand. Some of these big companies may not stand.
Yeah. Will there be an ultimate winner to all this? I mean, eventually someone's going to win and have all the data.
Hopefully there probably won't be just one winner. There'll be a whole bunch of winners for different aspects of things. So I think that's probably how it'll end up. And that's a good thing that we'll always have some competition. I think it'll be very hard for some single company to just be the only person that stands. It's a fiercely competitive field, and everyone wants a piece of it. There's a lot of action, there's a lot of change, and even big companies can fall anytime. So the field moves very fast.
And one gets the sense that products aren't important for themselves so much as they are as important to who is using them, when, and where.
Right. And
that's kind of weird, though, isn't it? I mean, we're not really talking about producing a new product or a better battery or a better whatever.
But no, we are talking about all of that.
We're just learning. It's like, give it to them and then see what they do with it. And then we'll get the next one and sell that to them.
Yeah. But below all of that is, you know, what are we essentially doing? We are essentially trying to improve the productivity that each of us has, whether it is in a workplace or whether it is at home in our personal lives, right? So we can stay in touch with our friends and family in a lot better way. And I completely agree with you. We should still go out and interact with people, just like you were giving an advice to your quiz participant a little while ago. So we shouldn't stop doing that.
You can't go by Chuck, though. I mean, doesn't come down to Chuck versus big data.
I know. He did a great job. Yeah. But you know, there's a balance, and we are just trying to be more productive. I think all of us do, I think, a lot more things now because we have access to these technologies at the tip of our phones. So we can find things, we can get to things without getting lost.
But don't you really think? It's really not about us or even about the product. It's about these companies. I mean, there's incredible wealth being... I mean, look at Amazon, for example. That guy's got everything covered now. Bezos owns practically the ruler of the world now. And he's done it through the products and the books and all that stuff. But those things are not even important to him. You get the feeling. The important to him is that he has total control over consumers' habits, you know. You know, and knowing their preferences and knowing what they're going to want next and stuff.
Yeah, so I think two points to that. One is I agree that hyper-personalization is something that we all as consumers have to be aware of that. And at the end of the day, these companies cannot provide you something that you do not want. So if we all are aware of what we want and demand that, the innovation that we have in this country will produce companies that will provide that for you. Mm-hmm. And even these big companies that you talk about, they don't provide you all the services that you need. Right?
But they want to.
That's
the goal, isn't it?
That's right. Yes. And it is good they all want to because that's what keeps them competing with each other and trying to produce the next thing that you would want to buy or purchase. So I think there is this huge amount of competition, absolutely, but it's not a single company that controls it. At the end of the day, these guys will only sell what you are willing to spend your money or your time with. Things are pretty finicky, right? Especially when you're selling things to end consumers. Consumers switch out of apps very quickly. Remember, there was a time there was MySpace. It's not what people spend a lot of their time on. So you constantly have to innovate. Even these big companies that you're talking about, if they stop innovating, they'll die very soon.
Yeah. And so you think it's for us, not for them.
They are in it to make money, right? But they are not going to make money if they have a product that you do not want.
Right.
So
I'm wrong to feel if any of this is worrisome.
No, it's not us against them. It is both of us. I feel
I'm trying to be reassured here.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Okay.
We should get you one of these free products or something like
that. Yeah, get me free products and an app that will change my life.
There you go.
The killer app, Jignesh. Thank you for taking
time
to do this. Very interesting. At the University of Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen, Jignesh Patel, professor in computer sciences.